Welcome to Tech Stuff, the show with three engineers and three very different viewpoints. I'm your host, Zane Rizvi, and with me are my co-hosts, Chiraslava.
Hello, everyone.
And Sandeep.
Hey, guys. Nice to be talking to you again.
So today we'll be talking about a lot of the legalities around coding. And legal will often make people start falling asleep. But these are questions that get close and near and dear to every developer's heart, which is, who owns the code that you write? Especially what if you're moonlighting at work, and what can you use your code for? Shaping open source code that other people can monetize, or should they be able to monetize it? And so we will start off by just talking about a few weeks ago, the Nginx office. Nginx is a probably have all heard of Nginx, the server code. So the office in Russia was raided by authorities at the request of Rambler. And Rambler is a Russian search engine. So a lot of their servers were confiscated. A couple of the founders, I believe, over there were arrested for it and then let go the next day or later that day. Their phones had their entire contents copied over. It was a pretty traumatizing event, and then a lot of people were very upset about that online. There's a big hubbub. And this was justified because the guy who ran Nginx, he used to work for Rambler back in the early 2000s, more than 15 years ago. And he started this stuff while he was working over there. And so this current Rambler leadership basically said, hey, look, we own part of Rambler and we're gonna sue you. And that suit involved police, big raids.
I mean, this is typical for that type of region, geographical regions.
It's interesting to actually mention that there were criminal charges. Usually this ends up in civil, but it was criminal charges. I think that was one of the reasons why it was more violent, I would call it.
Yeah, because like normally you have like a notice being given, which is the civil aspect of it. And then if you're not complying with anything, then the cops come into the play. But over here, it was barging down the doors like from the first place.
Exactly.
So,
Sorry.
So this leads into a interesting point of like, who owns your code? Like what rights do your employers have over code that you write in your pet project? Go ahead.
I just want to comment specifically on this case with Nginx. So first of all, we don't know exactly the details, but it's possible. It's absolutely possible that Igor Sisoev, who is actually author of Nginx, have signed with a Rambler agreement that says that everything that he is doing belongs to Rambler.
Which would be your standard hiring agreement that is very common.
Correct. This automatically means that you cannot legally license to open source license whatever you're doing even on the free time. That would be direct violation of that agreement with the company. And we don't know. Have he signed it or no? We don't know. And to be honest, I'm not in position of doing any legal conclusion. Neither of us are working with legal team. So we're like, you know, just dudes from the internet. So keep this in mind when you're listening to what we're saying.
This is not legal advice. We are definitely not lawyers.
Exactly. We are just talking about viewpoints as usual. Like, what if? What if I was there? What if I was on the other side of the story and things like that?
Exactly. But my point is that if Igor actually have signed such agreements, the licensing that he made for Nginx would be direct violation of that agreement, because he mentioned that everything he agreed that everything that he've done belongs to a company and he cannot relicense it automatically. Now, we don't know if this happened or not. And obviously, immediately after that, all the big Russian IT companies publicly stated that that they do want to open source to be more safer place. So effectively all of them try to protect Igor, and this is exactly what resulted in the fact that he got released. There was a lot of critics that the volume of these many voices that were trying to protect open source was not too loud. Yes, probably true, but you know, if anyone going to comment on our podcast with the same attitude, please also mention what exactly your company have publicly mentioned about this particular case, because if nothing, don't both critic. It's my it's probably the first time I'm saying don't do critics.
So as a developer, right, when I think about signing an agreement with the company, mm-hmm. so we are paid for doing some work. That's mm-hmm. great. And the pay is usually returned in like per hour, including your vacations that you accrue is basically based on, like, if you work 8 hours into, say, 30 days, you accrue 4.5 hours worth of vacation time, which is paid. So everywhere we see, it is talked in terms of number of hours you put in. So having said that, doesn't it logically mean from, say, 9 to 5 or so, like 8 hours is what the usual working hours, the contracts and other things are signed for. Doesn't it mean like I am part of that employment, I am part of that company and abide to all of that within that stipulated hours? Don't you think about enforcing across your life for 24 hours a day till you are part of that company is like same, but you are getting paid only for 8 hours of the day?
So what would happen in the modern situation, where especially where as developers, we like to be flexible about our hours. That's something that we really, really value in the software industry. So what if one guy wants to work 9 to 5 one day and then 12 to 9 the next day? Or is working from midnight at home, he's doing company stuff.
I understand. I mean, there are a lot of complexities and ambiguity involved when I say number of hours to enforce. Like, it might be sometimes I will work on the night. Doesn't it count? It might be sometimes I work on weekend. Doesn't it count or count? There are a lot of ambiguities. Probably that is one of the reasons why it's a blanket statement and blanket contract and various things involved in the legal aspects. But I was just thinking on the other side of the story. Am I getting paid for 24 hours? Because if it is being enforced 24 hours of my life. So that's exactly how I was thinking. But practically, I totally agree with you. If I was an employer, it would be really hard. Even if I am as an employee, it's really hard for me to communicate to my employer that, okay, this is my working hours and I'm signing contract with you for these working hours and abide by it. If not, I will not be paid for it. And it's hard for both employee and employer as well. But I was just thinking logically. Yeah.
I recently known that I'm not supposed to sell my 10 cents. It's actually my 2 cents. So I just want to
tell me. Yours are more valuable.
You are appreciating your currency, my friend. Right.
You know, it's like good old joke. A manager enters the room of the meeting and says, I have no idea what you're talking about, but just in case, I'm already angry. So, my 2 cents about this. So there is actually two different angles to view on this. First one, if the person, specifically engineering's author, have signed an agreement, you cannot, you can ask philosophical questions, does it make sense, this agreement or not, but he is
obliged.
Obliged to do what he committed to do, and the law just doesn't work this way. Oh, you didn't know this time, so sure, like you next time you kill someone, yeah, we will get to you. But yeah, this is sorry, you're fine to go this first time. But the other question, if we will keep legality aside and we will just think if it makes sense to enforce such strict rules, this is a different question, and each developer can vote by either work or going and working in such company or not going and not working in such company. And this is effectively how we as a community can either enforce or support these agreements. So far, looking around, looks like we do support such thing because no one actually said, oh, I'm not going to join your company because I see here is a part of my offer that, for example, states that I'm waiving my rights to do a jury trial in the future for any potential disagreement with the company. I never seen anyone mention something like that. Actually, I don't know if there is any company that puts such clause in the offer, but I never heard anyone says, oh, I don't like this legal thing that I want to sign. And therefore, looks like we as a community actually do support this. And therefore, we need to face a consequence. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's... I mean, you bring up a valid point that, like, you can kind of vote with your feet and not go to such companies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little tricky, though, because there is no convenient search engine that will tell you, hey, these are the companies where moonlighting is allowed. I mean, there's, like, you can look around and find a few.
Rambler was not Rambler 15 years ago, right? It's after 15 years engines were built. Maybe if you joined Rambler 15 years ago, would you be able to make a decision based on 15 years down the line what actions they might be taking today? It's very hard and it's very ambiguous.
Yeah, because I mean, there's an aspect of like, and you kind of highlighted the distinction, Slava, which is that there is a legal aspect of doing what you have legally committed yourself to.
Mm-hmm.
And then a moral aspect of, hey, what you think is right and what should be allowed, which is more forward-looking. So the legal aspect, hey, what's done is done. That's not something that can really be changed. On a moral aspect, it's you've got two different parties whose interests need to be balanced out. Because the employer needs that stability, needs to know that, hey, look, this guy that did work for me, he can't come back later and... or some other company can't come back later and claim copyright over that person's work, or he doesn't claim copyright over his work and I get to keep the work that he did, and or he's not potentially saving his best ideas for his own side project and he's gonna suddenly start, he's not giving the best ideas that he has while he's still collecting a paycheck from me, which is another big conflict of interest which this these clauses often try to remove.
Yeah, it's basically like a trade, right? We are getting paid for that many number of hours. And on behalf of us, employer is also taking a risk. Like you rightly said, if something works great, I mean, it's good for both. But if something, usually it's good for business. But if something doesn't work great, employee is already paid. And even if in the case of termination, there are a lot of legalities and contracts that you might have seen with respect to severance and other things, which the company or the employer is absorbing without putting that pressure on the employee. So, like you said, the other side of the table, the employer, if you think from there, he's the one who is absorbing the whole good and bad. And usually it's legality versus morality that is brought into attention of public discussion, public debate, and Twitterati, that's what people call, tweeps and other people. It's very easy to communicate like legality versus morality, but usually everything needs to be legal, right?
And the devil is in the details.
Exactly, exactly.
I just want to add, Sandeep mentioned a very interesting thing, because when you're thinking that employer actually absorbing the risk, which is absolutely true, this risk is actually higher than one might think. Because if you're working with your employer, you have X amount of dollars per year. That is not actually how much the company absorbing, because there is this definition of cost per person in your company. And this cost is salary is usually not the biggest concern because of several reasons. First of all, you also need support. You need infrastructure, you need office, you need working environment, you need a lot of stuff, including legal support to hire you. And on top of this, if you're calculating all this money that's required to just bring you in the office to work, you also need to calculate additional investment return that the company could get if the company would just invest the same amount of money. And because of the cumulative effect, in 2 or 3 years, if you're staying 2 or 3 years, this investment return is actually huge, just because of the amount that you're paying, especially software developers nowadays, is huge. So now you're no longer looking at the salary, you're actually looking at all the investment return that you potentially could have gotten, whatever, but you never got, because you're now just paying this money per year. So this amount actually usually drastically bigger than the salary that you're thinking about, and this is actually a huge risk.
Yeah, and then that amount, like, generally it seems like people seem to consider the actual cost of a developer somewhere between 2.5 to 5 times whatever the developer's like annual salary is.
Yep.
So it's even if it was just 2x, that's a huge increase in cost from what you might think you're actually costing your company.
And also from a developer or individual employee perspective, it's like 1-to-1 relationship, right? I'm one employee and there is one company for me. But from employer perspective, it's like 1-to-many. There are hundreds of thousands of employees. So it's basically like not just cost of one employee, and it's cost of like related. It's basically like chain, network of people involved, network of employees being part of the company, network of employee being trying to do something interesting. And then there is a big thing that's going behind an employee, which is not just the employee and the employer, it's also like employees of that whole employer. So it's basically much bigger than just one-to-one relationship.
Yeah, so I think we're in agreement that employees are very expensive and that the work that a person does that's related to whatever work they're doing as part of their employment definitely should not be something that the employee can take home. I think we're in agreement on that, right?
Yeah, but I would like to hear your thoughts on like saying, I agree, employer is taking a lot of risk, employer is absorbing many difficult things just for us, and also it's not like always he's absorbing and doing something for goodwill. He's also getting a lot from an employee when things are successful. So it's like two-way. But one way, the things of risk is higher from employer side. Having said that, do you guys think it's a good strategy, which I know many companies, I think including Google, has the agreement where if you are working on something interesting, do let us know. We do want to support you. Let us make it formal. Let us make it kind of a legally right. And we support you. And there are various ways where you could not totally stop it, but kind of legalize or formalize things. So, which is kind of like good for both employees and employers. What do you guys think is a right set of agreement where a blanket statement that whatever you do is for me is not right? As a developer, we all agree on that. At the same time, whatever I do is mine from employee side is also not true. That is also something we agreed upon. But the middle path, I would like to hear, if you are an employer, and probably, let's play this game. Slava, being a manager, let me make you an employer. And Zane, let me make you an employee. Like, what all things you think there should be agreement between employee and employer, which makes these kind of issues very, very less susceptible?
I mean, obviously, as an employer, probably you need to probe and find the most efficient agreement for you that will be accepted by another parties. But if we do asking generic solution that will work for me out of random, I probably will have the next schema. By default, all the rights of everything you're doing belong to me. However, there will be a clear procedure how you can come to me and says, here is a project that I want to work and I can waive my rights for that specific project. From that moment, you can start working on that specific project with a capacity that we reach agreement. And this kind of seems where I will know precisely capacity and project that you're working on, and I will waiving my rights to own them, while by default, like whatever you're saying or writing or even thinking about will still belong to me.
Yeah, and that is kind of what seems like the middle ground between being able to say, hey, look, basically being able to take advantage of your inside information in your role and being able to create something that would be to the disadvantage of your employer, because you'd simply say, no, you don't have the right to build that for yourself, because that's going to advantage you over me. Build it for me instead. That's, I have your next project, sir.
Yeah. Am I hearing right where if I understand the inner meaning of what Slava said, I will be doing a thorough analysis of the proposal. Is it basically like, since you're coming up with a proposal initially as a business, as an employer, I'm going to evaluate, is it going to compete? Is it going to hurt my business or fame, name? There are a lot of aspects when it comes to company. It's not just business and money. There are a lot of things involved. Say, for example, as an employee, I do something open source and it's kind of like socially not acceptable, then it has an impact not just for employee, it also has employee. So beyond money, such personal work has an impact for the employees, employers as well, right?
Yeah,
so, go ahead. Yeah, I was thinking, like, is the middle ground basically based on pre-evaluation of things an employee can do and then kind of signing off? But doesn't it kind of become a very rare scenario? Because as an engineer, right, let's assume that I'm working on Kubernetes, for example. It's an open source project. There are also businesses built around it. And I'm spending 40 to 50 hours a week on the same project. It is very highly unlikely that I could think of something totally off. Say, for example, I want to start a restaurant business. It is possible, but don't you guys think most of the things I do will be somehow related to what I'm doing right now? So the middle ground that we kind of discussed right now is going to kind of get killed in the initial phase itself, because most of the ideas that I come up with probably related or maybe very close to the business.
Zane?
This is going to be something that's very case by case, I think, because it'll be a judgment call. And if you think about the practicalities of like how this is actually going to be implemented, it's going to really, really depend on your company. At some company, like just your manager will say, okay, hey, yeah, that sounds okay. And like, that's not something I want to work on. In my judgment, that's not relevant. So go ahead and do what you want and you're off time. Other companies, they'll say, okay, hey, we need to involve legal, we need to involve HR, make sure this is all like properly assigned and taken care of. Just an email written agreement is not sufficient for us. We have more policies in place, in which case, whenever you get lawyers involved, you will have a lot more scrutiny going into and a lot more what if this happens thoughts going down the line. And that's going to significantly increase your friction and the risks of stuff going bad or like the approval not being made. Though there's always a third option that we haven't really mentioned, which is to just do your side project, don't really tell anyone about it, and as long as you're not like as popular as Nginx, there's a decent chance the company will never come after you because they don't really care.
But what's the use as a developer? Like, I mean, whenever we start off something, majority of the times we do want it to be successful, right? I mean,
successful has different
exactly,
right? Because like successful is like you're trying to make a lot of money off of it. You want to just create an open source project off of it, or something that will, like if you want to make money off of it, but just enough so that you're comfortable yourself, not create a giant 100-person corporation out of it. If your project is generating maybe like $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 of income of profit a year, and you're just a solo developer, there's a decent chance that a big company will not even realize that this is happening, that it's even a thing, let alone come after you.
Don't you think that was the source of all these problems? Like 15 years ago, Nginx was not that popular, right? I mean, it eventually took off and there were a lot of hard work and then time spent in improving that. And I think it's having around 38% of market share in web servers, I guess. But
so we go back to
this mechanism. I just wanted to make a quick point over here, because something that you mentioned, which I kind of disagree and I feel is the source of the problem, because let me just sneak it in now, because anyways, it's a small thing that I'm doing right now. Don't you think that that's the source of many problems? Because you don't realize, you never know about the future, right? I mean, it's very hard. 90% of things that doesn't become as big as Nginx, like you said. So things are fine, but still,
You're rolling the dice. Yes. And it's not, again, we go back to, this is definitely 100% not legal advice by any means, but this is a, because why do most people or most developers write code on their side? Yes, they want to have a business, but also at the same time, we're passionate about these things. We want to work on side projects. We want to do stuff. It's exciting. It's fun. And there is a strong mentality of just write the code, get it, do something, get it working. And for the vast majority of people, their code will go nowhere. And then they will have lost nothing by doing this. Of the people whose stuff gets successful, there will be a percentage, small percentage, that gets very successful and is suddenly at risk. And of course, it is the most wildly successful stories that are at the greatest risk of something happening. And it kind of goes down to like, what was your actual ambition? Like, I mean, for example, at Microsoft, when the Windows Phone was released, Microsoft, yeah, I know. Microsoft really wanted to get apps built for the Windows Store. And they said, hey, look, like at Microsoft, there was a very strict no moonlighting policy. And they said, hey, look, for this, for making apps, if you want to make apps for Windows Phone in particular, we're going to waive this policy, but you still have to sign a license agreement for every single app you make. And we'll auto approve it. It's just like one page form that you have to sign, and we'll just like give it a rubber stamp it. But even that's like a bit of friction, which people were legally told to go through. Though, frankly, if a person didn't, the chances of Microsoft actually coming after them was like pretty much nil. And like Microsoft really wanted to get as many apps as possible, and they still weren't able to get that many apps on there. And you know the history of it. It ended up shutting down. But that's just like, it's a trade-off. It's a risk-rewards trade-off. And what rewards you're expecting to and hoping to get out of it.
I mean, go ahead.
Time to time, I see the only way to interrupt is like you mute both of you. You guys are so passionate about this topic. I just wanted to also give you folks my view on this the thing. So first of all, I want to give our listeners a very clear advice. If ever in your life you decide to go gray area, consult your lawyer first. Like, be very, very clear on what potentially could go wrong. There is an interesting book that if you have not read, I would advise Black Swan, about a very unlikely event that caused disproportional big impact on your life. By being in gray area, you opening yourself to such black swans in your life. It's like the very amazing example from the Black Swan book is Turkey. Like if you're the turkey, your each day from the year from you looks like you don't have to worry about anything. You've been well fed, you've been looked into, until the specific Thanksgiving arrives. And this is your black swan as a turkey that you never expected, but has a small likelihood. It's only one day per year, but it has disproportional big impact on your life. So keep in mind that this disproportional big in life can happen. So be aware of your risks and be aware of what can potentially happen, and then be fine. Then you can make judgment call. The worst thing that you can do, enter gray area without understanding what could have happened. That is, Zane, sorry, you interrupted.
Yeah. So, and just in line with Slava saying about the black swan events and just what could happen, just note that my proposed strategy, or this possible strategy, not proposed strategy, this possible strategy, it comes with very asymmetric results. Like normally, if you're trying to start something, it depends on what you want to get out of it. If your goal is to become very well off or because of it one day, then by not asking for permission first, you have effectively remove that as an option. Your startup can never become like the next huge company, because if it does, it'll be taken away from you. It's like it's only painful in the success case. If your value prop is something else, like you're purely going for fame on an open source piece of software, then the success you might not be losing much if you were never planned to monetize it. But
I totally agree with that. Being in gray spot, you should just realize where you are rather than just being a kind of ostrich, just to put your head in the sand and assume nothing is happening. It's the most dangerous situation to be in. And I think we are also in agreement that usually these things come up. For example, a lawsuit is a huge money costing event for either parties, whoever is involved, right? So when is someone as a human is ready to spend something, you really want to get something out of it. It might not be just the profit. It might be like totally killing a product or killing a company or just making sure that someone, making sure that someone is actually suffering. So it can be any possible case which is not in the other side party's hand or thinking. So it's always better to understand and assume the worst and try to take the cautious decision and be clear, because at the end of the day, if you are clear, it's not going to hurt you. If you're not clear, there is a probability of hurting you. So it's better to make that probability closer to 100% of not getting hurt.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that like it won't hurt you at all, because having to go through this process of getting approval, at the very least, it's adding friction to the process, and it's adding their conversations with potentially HR and legal that people may not be 100% comfortable having. And so just that extra friction might make people less likely to work on just a random idea they had over the weekend. Like, hey, they thought, hey, let me try coding something up over the weekend. And it's going to be just a small project. And if I have to go through HR, legal and whatnot to be able to just do this 2-day project, a person is highly likely to either just not do it at all if they're being really, really strict about it, or just bypass the process because it's just the risk rewards might not seem to be lining up in that particular situation.
I actually slightly disagree, because my point of disagreement, it's not that... So here's the thing. The fact that person decided not to ask is nowhere near the signal that the process is hard to do. Like, you still can do your pet project on the weekend on your private GitHub without relicensing it. You still can get a result. You still can go on Monday to your boss, said that you get this project, and very likely boss said, yes, we can work it out and waive our rights. So the fact that the person have not done this doesn't mean that all the process is broken and therefore the person decided not to do so and bypass. No, the fact that person bypasses something doesn't automatically mean that the process is broken. No, the person might just ignore the process. That's about it. And sure.
So in your example, isn't it that the person is retroactively getting permission? Because like, hey, they coded something up on the weekend. Now they're coming back on Monday and they're asking the boss, hey, that thing I already wrote, which technically you guys own, can I have it back, please?
Yes, and this feels like a normal process, especially if you agreed on this type of relationship with the company. This makes sense. I would highlight that I don't want us to mix two things. One, the rules of game that you have accepted consciously, and another, how you think rule of game should be. And the rules game that is right now on the market that looks like everyone accepting consciously, they actually not that bad. Yes, you have to go and retroactively ask your employer, can I get the rights back? But this by itself doesn't mean that the employer will start saying no. Like, you actually need to have numbers on the hand to say how many time employers will say no, how many time employers in generic say yes. And it's absolutely possible that you will find that employers actually saying yes to almost all requests. We don't have these numbers in generic in the industry, unfortunately. So we can only hypothesize about it, but like, we don't know what the numbers are.
I mean, one thing you guys mentioned was like, not doing this doesn't mean process is hard. Also, I would like to say that not doing this also doesn't mean the intention was to hide, but it's hard to prove that. So that's exactly like why we are discussing like why it's easy and better to be on the white or black and make a conscious decision, right? Because, for example, in this case of engines, the author clearly mentions that he did mention that he's working on it to Rambler really long ago, while even he was working on it, but Rambler did not care. And he also accused that only when they received a huge investment that happened last week, I think last or last to last week, very, very recently, that's when Rambler decided to go against them. So basically, these are some of the discussions that's happening between the parties. So also, like, just to summarize, the reason for not doing may not be the process being hard. At the same time, the intention of not doing may not be always malicious. It might just be like fate of sequence of events that happens and lands you in the trouble, or you just get away with that and nobody notices because nobody cares about it.
If I learned something from today, I need like constant with my lawyers. Like, here's what I've done last week. Anything here seems unusual? No, you're fine. Okay.
Like, that'll be $200, please.
Yeah. $1,000, yes.
Yeah, actually, unfortunately, we are actually making a fun of it. Even we smiled at it, but it's the unfortunate, more frequent lawsuits that's happening, which can ruin a lot of really good engineers. It's not just in engineering, it's happening in everywhere. So there is always a knife for protection, and the same knife can be used for destruction as well. So
yeah. And if your goal is to start something that will generate revenue, especially if you have aspirations for generating a lot of revenue at some point in the future, it's basically a no-brainer that you want to get that written permission from your employer, because otherwise, like, if you happen to succeed, it's going to get taken away from you.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, the gray area is, if you don't have those aspirations, what happens? And I don't know if I'm personally convinced that, like, if I'm doing like a side project for just like, for example, a local organization, like a church or something, that I need to worry about, hey, should I get my manager's permission before I do this? I mean, doesn't hurt, like you're saying, but it's just an extra friction point of, especially if it's not just the manager who's going to be involved in that conversation.
Yes, indeed.
All right, so I think we've run out of steam on this conversation, rung it dry. So the next one. Well, we've talked about who owns your code. Now, who can use your code? What happens if you do ship open source software and other people want to try to make money off of it? And the prime example is our Elasticsearch and MongoDB. Both of these companies are currently very, very upset at AWS for using their open source software, and they're not seeing a penny out of it. And they're potentially losing customers off it because they're running their own managed versions of these softwares. And I don't know if this is the case or not, but maybe their fear, at least, is that their customers are leaving their managed solutions and going for that same software on AWS. So, do you have any thoughts that you'd like to start off with on this topic?
I actually think that I think I hear echo of myself. Sorry, it might be from myself. I will remove it from the recording. Let me fix my earphones. Okay, so I think it's actually kind of related to previous topic, and here is why. So there was another case. I'm forgetting what was the case when also company who like owns the source code, they sued the owner. And the interesting thing happened. This company, I will try to find what was the case back then. That company that initially initiated the lawsuit started doing business, but providing to other businesses guarantees that they will never sue them for using the software. So this is like an interesting business model that enforces some interesting clause in the licensing, allowing you to get money just for providing guarantees that you never sue someone who in the position of somehow violating the licenses. And
that sounds like there's a lot of patent claims that are related to exactly what you're referring to.
And unfortunately, that actually striked and echo of that event was heard for many, many years when the company was thinking, oh, open source, no, I'm not going to touch it because like someone can come and sue me easily. And I see right now a second wave of people realizing how much power they do possess by licensing their software. They just, it's unbelievable how much power and what crazy things you can put to the license. And therefore, it feels like we are on the verge of the next wave when the company will, who do realize this, will start to fight back and will start to figure out how to enforce, how to get more money out of this, how to monetize license. That is a question that looks like companies start asking. And this is kind of scary.
That's a really, I like the way you put it. How do you monetize open or your software's licenses, especially if you want to release it as an open source software?
Yep.
Because we're coming back to the same question that we had in our previous topic, which is what is moral versus what is legal, or what should be like society should be pushing for versus what is the legal thing to do? And of course, in an open source software, using somebody else's open source software is 100% legal if they release it as open source based on the license. But if you don't feel like you want some other company like AWS to be reaping the benefits of your hard work, then you have to come up with a legal framework to make that not be the case. And drawing parallels, those parallels to how the patent licenses work is really interesting.
I hear when someone comes and say, okay, this is what is happening, and in moral worlds, I do feel like, oh man, this is not right. I'm not referring to any specific case, but in general, when you hear the sad story, you do feel that. But having seen this world for past 29 years, I have seen basically like morality wins when you are having an emotional chat with someone. But if you want to make yourself, your business or your family or basically like your space safe, you have to go by the framework that is existing from hundreds of thousands of years, which is basically a law. And there will be some chance that gets out of it. There would be some updates, amendments that keep happening. There will be like, there is a framework which is established. And if someone talks about this topic, I would say that as a person, as an individual, I do hear what you say, but try to find a way where you could use that framework to safeguard yourself if you feel like you are not being able to compete against something big, right?
Yeah, there's a interesting parallel to just how societies tend to work, because if you're like even something like trust in societies, if you're in a society where you can trust most of the people will do the right thing, but maybe 1% of the people will do something that takes advantage of the trust you're offering them in an untowards way, then most of the time you'll be fine, but just that one person could potentially really, really ruin your day. If you're like leaving your doors unlocked, you trust no one's going to come to your house, but just that one person who knows, hey, people leave the doors unlocked here, comes in and steal your stuff. Now, that type of a trust environment can be maintained. If you're in a environment, if you're in a society where people who violate that trust get punished somehow, either you've got the police who are going to stop them and arrest them, or if it's not, that's still a legal framework, but you just have a society where the community will reject those people, they will be shunned, people will not want to deal with them. That's something that will make sure these unwritten rules of the society are upheld and implemented. But when that's not always going to be the case, and that's not an easy thing to do. Especially these unwritten rules are tricky, because like morals are unwritten rules, but everyone has their own subjective interpretation of what it is, which will be slightly different from each other. And once your group is large enough, it becomes very hard to come to a wider consensus. If it gets to the point where it's hard to come to a wider consensus on what the exact rule should be in a given corner case, that's when you really need something that's like these hard and fast laws to say, hey, this is exactly what we're going to say is wrong and this is what's right. And going forwards, if society's views change, then you need to update those laws or maybe add more laws to say, okay, hey, before that we agreed that this was not okay, but you know what, now our views are kind of shifting, we need more different rules to specify the subcase of that. In fact, like a lot of laws around, like historically, just a lot of like laws around modesty or appropriateness had very different rules because you didn't need that type of external regulation. And those changed over time, and other things needed external regulation. And so just these are just one type of things that evolves over time.
Exactly. 2 points here to be very specific. One is, for example, you could take, there is no non-compete law on the employment in California. And that might be due to evolution of the software big giants which got built in Silicon Valley. And they needed the support of the framework to not sue, where they could have the employees move around to innovate and build things. So that's one specific case where things got evolved. Non-compete agreements are very hard to enforce in California. Second thing, with respect to a specific case about Elasticsearch or maybe even Apache Spark, which are like really big software on AWS as a business, right? Don't you guys also think that if it was not AWS which made it possible for someone to use it, it might not be as big as it is? It might be, it might not be, but thing is, it's kind of like chicken and egg problem. It's hard, but it's going to be really hard to take a side on it.
Or even if you claim that AWS is not what made it so big, could you make the same claim about it being open source and free to use? That being the, because what would they have been that big if they were closed source and proprietary from the start?
I want to ask a quick question, because what's the problem? Are the problem the fact that, oh, I built soft open source software, it became popular because exactly I made it this way, and now when it's getting popular, I want money out of this and no one gives me money? So what's the problem? That I agreed to a particular distribution model, and now the problem that I don't like that people doing exactly what I gave them permission to do with the software? If this is a problem?
Exactly.
Okay.
Because like I said, you can do this with my software and I will provide services. You can do X with my software and I will give you maybe services like Y, mm-hmm, to help me make money. And oh, hey, you're doing X now, but that's cutting into my Y profit, or how do I make my Y bigger?
Yeah, but you agreed to give me these permissions. It's not that it's a surprise to you. It's not that you forbid. You gave the permission to me, and I'm doing service better than you. Sure, that I'm buying. So it feels like when you want to create software, you can give any permissions you want that will help you to make the software successful. But as soon as someone actually takes your successful software and tries to monetize it, you won't suddenly backfill the license and forbid this.
Pretty much.
It's so convenient. Like, it's amazing.
It makes for a good argument in the court of public opinion.
I have a hack for you. I literally have a hack for you. Now, listen, this is $5 million idea. So you, Zane, will come up with license that says the following one. This is a license in the name of Zane. Everyone can use this software in any way they want. Also, this license includes all the items that will be added in all the future version of this license ever published on this website. You're done. Done. Here is your legal way of backporting anything you want. I'm going to start license my software this way. Like, all my open source will now be licensed this way.
Wait.
To summarize what we talked, basically we are saying that we need a framework, and we are sure that framework is going to evolve along with the requirements. Say, for example, the non-compete agreement in California, or the licensing issue, a software vendor or the open source community might change their open source software license. And we should definitely link our episode 1, where we exactly talked about this, in our description of this episode, so that our listeners can hear more of our views on this very specific topic, open source or not open source, monetization, and various things we talked about. To summarize, I definitely want to end, Zane, if you don't have any more topic, please let us all say that this is all our views. Please take it with, in Slava's world, 10 cents or 5 cents or 2 cents, whatever you want to call it.
So it's 6 cents.
Yeah, makes sense. So 6 cents. But gray area is always risky. And we all agree on that. And it's always easy than what we think to legalize or formalize. It's not just about legal, to formalize anything that we do. It's much easier than we actually think that has a friction. So it's always better to be on the whiter side.
There's a big difference between what we feel like is moral and what is actually legal.
Yep. So, be advised.
Yes. On that note.
So basically what we said is, the advice is, don't take our advice.
Basically.
Yeah.
All right. Till next time. This is Tech Stuff with Zane, Slava, and Sandeep.
Bye.
Bye-bye.